This is Ray McGowan, recorded at the Marguerite Bay Reunion in Bowness on Windermere on the 31st of October 2010 by Chris Eldon Lee. Ray McGowan.
Ernest Raymond McGowan, MCGOWAN, and 30th of the 5th, 1933, was born in Londonderry.
So these days you're how old?
77.
What sort of education did you have?
The normal primary school, grammar school. I was not academically inclined, or very interested really, so I didn't go on from grammar school. And so I went to work basically. They used to have a thing called the O-level and A-levels before they invented GCSE. Did the O-levels and left, got myself a job.
What was the job?
The job I actually was working in a factory. Londonderry was a very basic, lonely employment, and it was the shirt industry, which is unfortunately now all gone. But these, the BSR, they call it Birmingham Sounder, they made record changers. He actually invented the automatic record changer. And I was there, and then I discovered that after a couple of years, there's more to life rather than working on a factory. It's time to go and see a bit of the world.
Yeah.
So I went off to London and went to the London School of Telegraphy, took the PMG, communications course and all I got there, weekends and all I got there, various jobs, kept myself together.
Why did you choose radio work?
I read something that, I wanted to see a bit of the world, and you could go on the Merchant Navy with officer status as a radio officer, right, okay? And the beauty about being there, radio, you had no deck work or anything, and the radios were all shut down. I was sensible enough, I got the right advice, I can't remember, that you actually, when you were in port, the radios were all shut down, so you're going to see a bit of the world. That's why I took up radio, actually.
What was your first awareness of the Antarctic, that a place like that existed?
A guy came to the London School of Telegraphy and gave a talk about that. As it turned out to be, actually, they were very, very short. The two things when I joined FIDS, actually, that they couldn't get at all, was doctors and radio operators. Doctors because, Tottenham, they had to be a junior doctor and all that got there, and this would upset their career. And radio operators had to have a proficiency in Morse, because it was mostly Morse code work, and that you couldn't take somebody and learn on the base. You had to be competent because nearly all the communications was by Morse in those days.
So had you not read Scott of the Antarctic and...
But not seriously. In fact, actually, just before I went, what really bit me was Anderson's book, Major Anderson. I was serialised, actually. No, he went down, actually. Then I applied and went for the interviews and all that got there, and you knew you'd done very well when they sent you up to Harley Street for a medical. And I was... This is where the laugh came in, actually. I turned up, I think it was Saturday or something. Saturday, we were sailing on Monday out of Southampton. And I arrived Saturday afternoon, the rest all arrived, which they're all scientific blokes from Cambridge and everything they got there. And I said to myself, Ray, you're out of your depth. You don't even know what the heck they're talking about. You know? You're going away for 2 years with this crowd. It's only because we went up, actually. This is a true story. We went up there that evening and had a few beers. And they shall be nameless, but as we were wandering down, we put a few beers in us. One of the pals said, I'm going to achieve a life's ambition before I go to the South. And before we could say, what's that? He went up and urinated against the police station door. And we're all inside. So they were human after all, you know what I mean? So I stayed and then failed on the Monday. But I just was out of my depth at 3 or 4 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, because they're all the glaciologists and magnetologists and quite know what. Yeah, I hadn't got the education to even know what the heck their jobs were.
It didn't put you off though?
Oh, no, it didn't put me off. Once they were human on the Saturday night.
Once they peed against the wall.
They're just fine. A credit. They're just like myself.
Which base did you go to first?
Went to the Argentine Islands first, actually, base AF. And I was only there for a month, 6 weeks. And then they asked for somebody to go. It was boring, actually, in the Argentine Islands, to be honest. There were two radio backup radio officers, so to say, radio up there. And they were looking for somebody to join the sledging base at BSO, and I fancied. I just didn't go on. I'd done a heck of a lot of youth hauling and cycling and everything I got there. So I replaced the guy up at BSO, and I went up to BSO, and then they came up with this idea of you probably know what, Cape Recluse. And what happened there is, I think it was, you have to give me the, 50 year, it was a fidacity to the aerial survey of the Catalinas. And, and they looked at, the idea was to try and transverse the plateau from Hope Bay down to Yonge and Marguerite Bay. The problem is, how do you get up there and lay the depot? Because they couldn't do it. Hope Bay, actually, way down. So they come up with this idea that from Cape Recluse, if we put a party in Cape Recluse, and there's only the three of us, but we could take stores up there for the plateau, join with them and go on down with them. Well, we spent the autumn putting all the stores up there, and this was manhauling and backpacking the whole flimming way up.
No dogs?
No, we hadn't got a dog. And there was no railroad top. It was like, as I say, if you look across there, it was like doing 3 miles to get to the top of there, up and down, round corners and everything you got there, round corners. And went up in the spring and we couldn't find a box. The whole lot had disappeared. And anyway, we waited up there, and unfortunately then the weather turned against us. And out of the 50 days it's there, if you ever get the wee brochure they hand out, if you go to the Falklands, it might really close up. Out of the 50 days, actually, we were in the field. We spent 39 lying up. The weather was so, blizzard after blizzard. And so we were down to half rations, and we decided to bail out. And we bailed out, actually, and I think we were unfortunate, actually, because we'd only gone half a mile, and it was a flat camp. It seemed to be, I'd picked a pretty camp, one of these, what they call catabatic one areas, And anyway, the following day, the whole base ledge turned up, but they'd been caught the same. And we're both nearly out of food, so it was a case of racing to Recluse. We raced down, it took us 3 days to race back to Recluse. Downhill, dogs at nothing, men at very short rations. And we got there, and we were emergency. This is where Shackleton was the route straight to pick us up. I went and had an iceberg, I had to go back to South Georgia. So can you imagine trying to feed, what was it, 28 dogs? We had no boat or anything, and we weren't on a beach. So we had a bit of trouble catching or trying to shoot seals and things like that to feed the dogs.
So the Shackleton didn't get to it?
No, it never did get to it, exactly. The Bisco turned up in the end about a month late.
The Bisco did?
Yeah.
Let's talk a bit about that trip across the top then. Because you were going up to rendezvous with...
We were up to rendezvous with the Hope Bay people. Yeah. Wally Herbert, Lee Rice, Ollie's the best known, probably. Unfortunately, they're all dead now. But we rendezvoused, and the idea was we'd have enough stores to back them up, and then we could then journey the whole journey down to get off. The new way down, actually... Which was based on, I can't remember the names. There was a way down there, but it couldn't be done on the one journey. It was so long, you see. So anyway, when we did rendezvous with Wally there, they had suffered the same as the weather beat us.
You had one or two interesting experiences on that particular trip, didn't you? And in particular, I think at one point you were sleeping in a single man tent.
Oh, yeah. How you do that? Yes, we took a pup, what they call a pup tent with us. I didn't suffer the cold the way the other two did. So I was sleeping in the pup tent. I left more room than the other. Unfortunately, actually, after they dug me out on the third morning, so I could get out of my, out of my bunk, out of my sleep, my ankles, it was in the lee, and therefore it got covered every night over the pup tent. They said, I have to move under the other with the other.
So what was happening? You were sleeping in the tent and you would wake up in the morning and you couldn't get out?
You couldn't move. You couldn't move the say the weight of the snow and all on top of you. It was just crushed down the top of the tent.
How was that psychologically? Did you?
Never thought about it. You just sort of chose, hey, dig me out. That's when you sort of dig me out. I'm afraid, actually, you know, you face things that, like, and you just face them. There's not much you can do about it, so why worry about it? So they dug me out about 3 months. They said, we're not digging you out again, getting the other tent. So we had to crowd the three of us in under the one tent.
It happened twice, didn't it, you got buried?
No, I think it's good. I can't remember, Jack. I think it was the third morning they dug me out. They said, we're not doing this again.
You got buried on the 11th of November and again on the 21st of November, according to Dick Foster's report.
Dick probably, yeah.
And he remembers hearing your plaintive shout for "Get me out of here." the other problem you had with the tenting was carbon monoxide problems.
No, I don't remember that.
You don't? Okay, fair enough.
We
heavy snow and drift made us realise that something was wrong, and we narrowly avoided carbon monoxide poisoning. Because the ventilator on the peak of the pyramid tent had become blocked with snow.
Don't remember that.
Okay, perhaps you were in the other tent at that
maybe
point.
Maybe I was in another tent at the same time.
So what was it like with three of you in a two-man tent? It must have been pretty cramped.
It was pretty cramped, actually. And basically what saved our sanity, if you want to know, actually, the whole time, was a game of Scrabble.
I was amazed to discover that Scrabble was invented in 1957.
Yeah, and Scrabble, and we became experts. And we had the Chambers Dictionary, which gave American spellings as well. And when you're not playing, you sat and read the dictionary. How do you get rid of X's and Q's and all like that there? And as far as we came up with it, there's one word, I think in the dictionary, that you can use a Q, but it has to be followed by a U. I don't know if you know it or not. It's got very popular today, but not in those days. It's a burqa.
What?
A burqa, ladies.
Oh, burqa.
You never heard of a burqa in the 1950s, you know. It's simple like that. There's another one that came up with a zoo. It can be a ZHO or DZHO. You remember these today, right? It's a type of cattle that raise in Himalayas.
you're remembering Scrabble solutions from half a century.
Half a century ago, because we were very strict. You couldn't put a word down without telling what it was. You couldn't chance to look it up, you know what I mean? So it was a bit boring because I think the longest trip actually with whom was 16 days. We didn't move at all, if I remember rightly. We didn't move an inch.
Yeah. What was morale like then, Ray?
Oh, very good. Very good. There's no doubt about it. I mean, we just actually, we just were so independent sort of characters that just, you know, go on. We remained actually a friend for life, still friends actually, which is highly unusual for you know, the fun fed to be discovered. We're all idiots.
Give me a little pen portrait then of Dick Foster, who was.
Dick actually had just finished his national service. He went down, he had the chip on his shoulder. He was a cash hand, even though he was base leader. I had a razor up, so I was professionally trained. Dennis was supposed to be a surveyor.
Dennis Kershaw.
Yeah. Dennis was a bigger idiot than I was. In the sense that, you know, this is true. The year before, they had turned Dennis down because he knew nothing about surveying.
Mm.
So we went on this course at Bolton Technical College. Okay, mm-hmm. And accepted him. What he didn't tell him is he went one night.
Oh,
really? Somebody showed him some, remember, was it a plane table or something? I don't know what the heck it was, actually. Around Bolton Park, that was his surveyor. Now, we never got the theodolite out of the case once, so it didn't really matter. It didn't really matter, actually. But, you know, that's a, That's the type of people who were in the 50s.
Well, you were supposed to be surveying the route as you went, but I get the impression that very little surveying got done.
Never got the theology out of the case.
You didn't?
No. Never mind surveying the route.
Is that because Dennis didn't know or because the weather was so bad?
Well, a combination of both. And the combination of both. Dick had been a quantity surveyor or something like that there. And Dick said, I'll show you how to But I never came out of the case, actually. It never came out of the case. So it didn't matter whether Dennis knew you. And unfortunately, he died, actually, Dennis, not so long ago.
Your destination on that particular trip was Recluse Peninsula.
Yeah, we were dropped at Recluse Peninsula.
Was this Portal Point?
Well, yes, somebody actually, I love, maybe you can answer me. Why did they change the name?
I don't know.
Nobody knows.
It's the same place, is it?
It's exactly the same place. And yet, that little hut is in the museum in Stanley, and it's called the Cape Recluse. Why did they bother?
They changed Cape Canaveral, didn't they, to Cape Kennedy then back
again? Oh, well, you can see why. Yeah. You know, but there.
What was the hut like when he got there?
That's very, well, spoiled, basic. Basic hut as it was. It was built as a refuge hut. It wasn't built as a living hut. Contrary to what it's like in the museum at the moment, it is nowhere, the interior is nowhere they like they had the museum. I even phoned the girl and told her that. Because our friends were, you know, and Andari Cruises brought me back photographs. I think they got A, we had no pin-ups at all. B, we had no oven at all. We had three primer stoves, two tilly lamps, and a Falpar's little heater. And that was basically it, and three bunks. I mean, managed to survive very well on it, actually. But when there were only three of you in the hut like that there, you weren't going for cordon bleu cooking or anything like that there. Well, tell you what we did do was probably now health and safety have a fit. We got two flowered tins together, put them together, put a piece of basis cloth over it, two primers over it, underneath me, managed to cook bread. I've got photographs of
them. Made an oven?
We made an oven out of that. That was the oven we had. But when I seen the photographs of this oven, where did they get that? Oh, sorry, yes, we had a gramophone and three records. And we had a lot of books with somebody. I don't know who it is, ordered from Foyles, you know, in London. He sent what they couldn't sell anywhere else. They had all the Russian novels, like, you know, Galerim, Swine, is it, you know, Prime and Part of it, you know. And at 5 weeks, you know, when you turn the page, you couldn't remember the name of the page in front. And all 12 copies of Proust's The Swan's Way. Have you ever tried reading that?
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, that was like reading compared to the rest. And that was busy. We had a small radio. It was the field radio, Irish Army field radio.
This was a 68, was it?
I think it was 68, yeah. 68, you know, the two box thing. Was the result is you couldn't afford to listen, not that you could pick. But so we could pick up one station. That was somewhere in South Africa. And at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the half hour, they had the gun show, I remember that. Then it referred to the Afrikaans. But we didn't want to set of headsets between three, so you weren't listening to the radio. Mm-hmm. We had to save the batteries because the only commission occasion we could be leaving down in BSO, the other thing, was by Morse.
Let's just go back a little bit. Did you have a problem with this oven of yours? Did it ever go wrong?
No.
I understood that you used three primer stoves underneath it.
I thought it was three.
And then the middle one started to melt.
Oh, that's right, yes, but we got that fixed. No, that was only the solder at the top. Yes, that's right. Yes, it did give a bit of heat. But then we just reduced the two because it was too much heat or something like that.
Was the hut draft proof or was it?
Yeah. Yes.
Was it warm?
Yes. It was. You didn't fit around a shirt and a sweater or anything you got there because we only had the one small colour gas, you know, wick thing. Well, it was comfortable enough.
Was there any problem with condensation?
No. Not that I remember, none at all. We weren't producing anything that you really, you know, I don't know, worst composition, you know, it was basically the outside temperature always kept it, and we weren't really using that much, you know, our stoves or anything. They cut internal comp.
Mm. And how about washing yourselves? Was that on the agenda or not?
Just about. When you're stuck, you had a rough wash. It was the greatest thing when you got back in Nabisco, you had your first bath for a year. No, you didn't have stripped-down showers. We weren't that blooming mad. Oh, it did actually sort of when we were back when I got back to Recluse, you know. Wally and Dennis decided to have a swim. So they slipped off and went down. I think I ran for 20 seconds.
A 20-second bath.
Yeah, that was a bad, but no.
There was one particular record which had a special meaning for you.
Yes, the Nuns Chorus, Victoria de Los Angeles. We used to play it morning, noon and night. I can't even remember the name of the others because we didn't like them at all, but we liked that one.
Dick suggests that it would be played as soon as you got back from a trip.
That's right.
First man back, put the needle on.
Put the needle on, Victoria de Los Angeles, I think you call her, you know, the Nuns Chorus.
The other records might have been Prokofiev and Elvis Presley. Is that?
I don't remember. We never played them.
And the radio communication he had at Recluse Bay, was that a voice or Morse?
No, Morse all the time. We hadn't got the strength of that wee radio. You just hadn't got the wattage to use voice. We could receive voice, but we couldn't send voice.
Right. Once, of course, the Hope Bay sledges turned up, you had the extra problem of having to feed the dogs.
Mm.
How did you go about acquiring the food?
That would give a lot of difficulty because, as I said, we didn't have a boat at Recluse, you know, the dinghy. We weren't on a beach, so you could see the seas over, you know, over this beach there and beach beach. And we actually built a raft. I often wonder this day, and it was sort of empty oil drums and put it, all the thing. Why we had empty oil drums, I don't know, I never knew. Only after, you know, 10 years ago, why did we have empty oil drums? We had no diesel generator, no, we had no oil. They didn't surely, you know, anyway, we made this, and on our end of the rope, got all the rope together, so they could get round to kill the season thing. We managed to keep the dogs, going, and of course, by the time we rested, there wasn't much, shall we say, in any food of any description, you know. The dogs were just fed whatever was at handiest, you know, the pemmican left over and things like that, the man rations, all the rations there, the bath, you know, all the dogs survived okay.
Dick talks about shooting a leopard seal.
Don't remember. Shot quite a few seals, but I can't remember.
Mm. Was that a tough trip or a magical trip?
It was a tough trip. It wasn't a magical trip in the sense that it was a frustrating trip in the sense that I achieved nothing. I didn't achieve anything. Mm. You know, I didn't achieve anything. Yes, we made our way up onto the plateau, first people ever up there. And it's just the fact, the disappointment of not getting down and with the Hope Bay crowd and all like that. So just the way everything fell apart. So it wasn't what you call a magical trip that way, you know. And it was okay, but, you know, I got to say we enjoyed it because it was a heck of a physical hard work. Mm. Give Dick his due, actually. Dick was the strongest of the three of us, and he was able to carry the pyramid tent on his back. It was a lot of places you couldn't even manhole. Dick carrying the pyramid tent in his back. Dennis or I couldn't have done it. Yes, we carried it between us, but, you know, in certain sections, only it was where it was one man, you know, almost kicking steps, going around the side of the corners.
Was the route that you took ever adopted on a regular basis?
Well, it was ever used again.
Mm.
Used again, because as far as I asked afterwards, and I was told, I don't know if it was true or not, I was done off the serial photograph done by the Catalinas. And what do you call that thing, you know, where you make 3Ds, they used to do during the war.
Yeah, I don't know what it's called, but I know what you mean.
And you know what I mean, like after the bombing.
Yeah.
And they reckon there's a writ. The only people who reckon there's a writ. Yeah, it's never been done before. I don't think it's been done since. In fact, the hut's now gone since Boat Sandwich was never going to be used. Anyway, the satellite's not used. Made that all redundant.
When you were picked up by the Bisco, where did it take you?
The Bisco then she started relieving the other bases. I think they got there, went back to Hope Bay, dropped the boys back at Hope Bay because the dogs, and they were from Hope Bay. She went and dropped them back, actually, back, and then just continued on and worked her way south. And I, you know, in those days, you got this, you were asked, actually, especially with what we call the sledging bases, where do you want to change? I said, yeah, I'll go to Horseshoe, you know, it'd be Lowland Arctic Circle and all I got to see you've been there. So we finally wound up again with great difficulty in Horseshoe. I didn't tell you the Bisco ran himself. He used to call him Kelly Johnson, he was from Northern Ireland like me, actually.
Oh, Bill Johnson.
Bill Johnson. He just said he'd break this piece of ice one day, ran the Bisco up on it, was stuck there for 10. Did melt it if we could get back up again. I've got a photograph again of me holding the Bisco up by the prow.
How did he get off again? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah, we went in the heat of the boat, actually melted enough so it slid off on its own.
He took the boat?
What?
How did he get him off?
The boat ran up onto the floe, okay. And the problem is it goes stuck on the floe. Because he hadn't got the power to pull it off, actually. So we had to wait until enough heat in the boat. The heat of the boat melted the floe and well enough so the boat slid off. Oh, we had a great time. I think I spent 5.5 months, if I remember, in that running boat. We never got anywhere in a hurry.
What was Horseshoe like when you got there?
Horseshoe was much bigger, of course. Base had never seen the size of it, though they got there was the six of us. And we settled down to life in a sort of Horseshoe and seemed to get on very well. And then we got the signal about they licked some emperor penguin eggs from the Dijon Islands. So it was decided actually, as I had the one with the field experience, four of us would go and get them. And unfortunately, the transmitter had broken down, and so we're out of communication. I think we got there. I could receive, but the transmitter was turned out very simple, but it took 11 weeks to find it very simple. But anyway, I didn't go with them.
And the reason, I've heard different reasons. The real reason you didn't go was what?
The real reason I didn't go was with two things actually. Henry Wyatt and Pete Gibbs was missing from Stonington, right? They never bothered keeping me scared ever, right? I couldn't swim. The other thing was the transmitter. Yes, you could transmit in one frequency thing they got there. So you couldn't leave it to... you couldn't leave it to the guys because... A deception, I think, was going to carry all the skeds and all they got there. And so you were doing a bit of a thing. They had to phone through the Met report, but then they put it on thing they got there. So it was decided I better stay where I am because we didn't know. I didn't know what happened to Pete or Henry, and this is it here. Do you ever hear the story what happened to them? The reason they didn't keep the shed is they stopped somewhere away down the peninsula. There was a Marguerite Bay. And went over to have a look at a bit of rock or something like that there. Of course, he didn't put the pig in him, the dogs, so the dogs decided to go home. So they set off, I think it was 35 miles after the dogs. They hadn't even got a bar of chocolate between them, never mind. Never mind. That's why they didn't keep his kids. They didn't know what
the... Think of the radio.
They had no dog in that radio. But anyway, that's where we on the difference in the base. It settled down. It was going to be a static base, but... A static base, but we're close enough to go down to Stonington, which is reopened. Actually, you know, the guys at Stonington reopened. And basically, unfortunately, that's what happened. The three lads, they obviously camped nice instead of camping nice, and it obviously broke up during the night.
Well, they went off without you because you couldn't be spared from the radio work. This is David Statham, Stanley Black and Jeff Strong.
Yeah.
Did you have any radio communication with them at all?
No. Yes, they had the radios and all, but the very first night they went off and it was very, very rough, you know, blizzard blowing. So they didn't keep the first night's kids, okay. So that's okay, that, you know, it's the first night, you didn't worry anything, you got there. I said, here, sheds. And it was the following morning, I think, that John, we walked up the hill and the bay was empty of ice. Sheer water. There's something wrong here. There's something wrong. You know, where the heck are they? And so they didn't keep the second night. And then the third night, I got all the other bases, everybody still listening out on the frequency, every one of them, in case they have atmospheric condition. And we did this for two nights or something like that there, during which time the bay refroze, actually. So we knew there was something wrong. And then one night, there was a bit of whimpering, and I can't remember if it was me or not, but we opened the door and walked one of our huskies. And if a dog could talk.
At what point prior to that had you begun to get very concerned for him?
Basically, after on the second night. Yes, you can forgive people not keeping the first night's gauge, maybe the weather thing they got there. But it was always the one thing that I used to preach around the radio preacher, for God's sake, keep your skeds. Not that you say, but, you know, we know you're there. I mean, as I say, we were worried about Henry and Pete. Like, are they falling down crevasse? Not that you could do anything. There are very few ways you could ever rescue anybody in those days. But you're trying to keep control. He's all right, lads, you know what I mean? And I look forward to sort of said giving them a pressy of the world news or something like that there, you know, that from the radio point of view. And that's when we started getting worried. And that's when we started getting worried.
And then the dog turned up.
The dog turned up. And a couple of guys came down from W, and about to help us out. We started to search the bay. They found, I think it was we one, yeah, they found eight other dogs. Now, the thing about it, what we put together, there used to be this argument among all the bait feds and all that guy there. Did you leave the harnesses on overnight or did you take the harnesses off? Some people didn't like it. And we found dogs with the harnesses on and dogs with the harnesses off. So we assumed that this happened in the middle of the night in the dark and they turned the dogs loose. The dogs made it, they didn't. Trying to make a way if you were under...
What conclusion did you come to as to what had happened to the three men?
Their ice broke up. They were drowned.
They were drowned?
They went away out to sea and we never found a sledge, box, hair, anything yet. The only thing we found was nine dogs.
But they cut the traces, had they?
No. As far as I remember, just the dogs were turned loose. I can't see them cutting the traces because this is going to happen in the dark. And where you going to find a knife? You just went out and turned the dogs off. And the dogs, okay, they could fight. I mean, they found another dog, actually, I think somebody was telling me, almost a year later. It wound up somewhere else, actually, a bit way up. But the dogs are capable, you see, of living off, not off the land, you know what I mean, penguin, anything you got there. They probably, but the humans didn't, they just disappeared. So we assumed that assumed they drowned, but never found tent, sledge, anything, and nothing.
John Paisley, who was your base commander, has written since that he had some, for want of a better word, premonition or psychic feeling about what was going on. Was that something that you were aware of at the time? You're shaking your head.
No. I want to be careful what I say.
All right.
No.
Okay.
I heard about this on the way home from John, but leave it at that again.
All right. But although Johnny Green had told you not to go searching for these men, there was an attempt made by Paisley and Gibbs, wasn't there too?
More than them, actually, we're not, well, this is why I didn't want to record, I could tell you what happened about going searching for them. But another rat recorded because I'm only going to slaughter a couple of people.
Okay, well, let's leave it there.
Tell me the mileage if you want to.
If you change your mind about recording it, come back to me. Okay.
Well, I would talk to you when we're finished. If you want to record it, I don't know, Maybe it should be recorded, but at the same time, it could cost a lot of bother.
Okay, well, that's your choice. What was the feeling like on the basin afterwards?
Well, there was not much sync, actually. The first people arrived, well, from the base was the W boys, and then the boys like came up from way and things they got there. Or sort of for me as it was, and this is it here. And then the Argentine boys arrived and they all started searching right round, and it turned so cold and so fast, actually. They had to abandon one of the dog teams because I can't remember whose team it was. I remember they had to come back urgently because the dog got frosted lungs. Mm. You know, the temperature really gone down like that there. But unfortunately, well, you know, there was so much, shall we say, accidents going on in those days. You must accept it. Thank God it wasn't me.
Well, it nearly was you, wasn't it?
I knew it was, but you accept things like that there, you see.
Do you?
Yeah, you do.
You would have been 25.
Yeah, you accept things like that there.
You didn't wake up in a cold sweat at night?
No. And you know, I've trouble with my hearing without diversifying. The reason I've trouble with my hearing is one morning in Belfast, 8:45 on a Monday morning, I parked my car beside a Ford Escort van, opened the boot, let my briefcase out, and the van blew up, £400 bomb, courtesy of the Provisional IRA. You don't know. Mm. You don't know, is it that day, this is it here. I seem to have saved my life again. As an explosion goes chum and then accelerates. I was in the chump bit, according to the army experts. And the whole thing man went past me and must move me every bit of it.
You were too close to be injured, were you?
Oh, too close to be injured. Oh, when I got home that night, actually, I thought, oh God, excuse me, I've got a flea, you see. Mm. When I took my clothes off, I was like wet sandpaper, my whole back. It was all the dust of the yard and all I got. It had been blown through my clothes and compressed, and I was able to scrape all this dust out of me. But you don't worry, you don't know the day. I've always been that way, that you don't know the day.
The base report for that period is hardly mentions this tragedy at all. I mean,
it's better not to talk about it because you only dwell on it. When tragedy happens, you're better forgetting about it. Or not forgetting about it, just put it in your back of your mind, okay? Else, now, not everybody's the same, don't get me wrong. I was thought, this is my feeling, look, get on with life, it's not our turn.
Practically, of course, you had to cope without half the base staff, didn't you?
Yeah, but we were doing nothing, let's be honest. All we were doing was Mets, skate. Then we started doing holiday trips, and I've got other bases to cover for us. We went down to Stonington and went down to the Argentine bases, and Argentine bases would come up to us. They were hell for banter. They had a big fridge, so they'd come up with half a side of beef. Came up once with a suckling pig, and what they wanted was pickles, which our base was coming down with pickles, and white flour. See, there were no white flour in Argentina, you know. Mm. And this is, they went home with the sledge loaded with white flour. And the other thing that they want, if you give them chocolate, not one of them would eat the chocolate.
Really?
Yeah. This is for my children back in Buenos Aires. Because it seems chocolate wasn't existed. And the only other thing that actually with the Argentines actually, although we get on very well with them, actually, once we come to agreement, actually. You don't give us a protest note, and we don't give you a protest note, because it's too much like bloody work, these protest notes. I don't know if you remember them or not, you know, especially when I had to code them all up and all this radio up. Don't want the hell of these, you know what I mean?
Oh, you would have to send the process by radio, would you?
Naval 25 codes, the same code as used by the Royal Navy. Now, I admire to this day, if you ever flimmin' watched any, you know, Cracking the Code there in, what do you call the park, you know, what they got there? The Enigma and all they got there.
Fletchley Park.
We couldn't do it with the code books. Away they go. Wouldn't they be before the recording? Now, I was supposed to be doing them sworn, you know, official secret. I wasn't supposed to show the rest of the bass leader, if needed to know, was on. The three of us sitting there, Brett. And I remember one night, we decoded this thing. I started off, your 17 Norwegians was the first. Well, that's not quite, we haven't got one Norwegian, never mind 17. We better go back to square one, boys, and start again.
Tell me about the conditions at the Horseshoe, because, again, looking through the base reports, the base was a bit of a mess, wasn't it?
In what sense?
Well, it was drafty, it was warping, the wood was warping.
Well, one little corner actually was a bit drafty, but that's all I remember. I painted it, the whole outside of it. Took this mad notion, painted it blue. And I was going to, but I was talked out it'd be John, I was going to put calf on the roof. You know, it was a mixture of paint, but needed painted, but no, this is it here. Needless to say, you see, what we decided to do, as there only was the three of us, right? And we'd go easy on the fuel, you know, the generators and things they got there, generators. And the big laugh we had with the generators was one day we used to have this, you know,
for cleaning things.
This crowd of pups, this is to say, we had some dogs. But we discovered then, if you had pups, the alpha female was allowed, this is now alpha female was allowed to have pups. The other bitches would kill every pup. Mm. So at these, somehow or other, these pups got under the hut.
Under the hut?
And they'd open every roll of this werewolf. And you couldn't see the diesels. You couldn't see the pups that's even mass. And I'm talking about, get that cow damn it, you're picking it out yourself for a week. No, I was just sort of say that it wasn't a luxury hotel or anything you got there. And I was used to see really the year before, the basic, so I didn't find anything wrong with that.
But the windows let the snow in, one of them blew away.
No, but I don't remember that at all.
You don't? Okay. What about the technical equipment, your radio gear? Was that the latest?
No, it wasn't. God knows when they made it. Everything we had was war surplus. Seriously. I mean, even the clothing you see when we were shooting for Stanley, even the guys that wear battle dress, you know, war surplus, and it was clapped out. This is it here, you know, I don't know where they bought it or what store they got it out of. And I mean, we had our backup radio was ones they carried in the bombers during the war. Never worked. Couldn't raise anybody on them. This is your backup one. That's why it was so important to keep the main one working. And basically, you had anything but up-to-date equipment. That's the thing, actually, up-to-date.
So it's pretty clapped out stuff,
was it? Yeah, in the sense that, you know, that here we were down in sledging bases, and basically you're relying on sledging bases. The guys in front of you the year before had been honest and left the sledging anoreks behind because you never got any new ones. So you had the same anoreks, you know, sledging anoreks handed down after year after year. Oh no, we very much seemed to be a shoestring operation. A shoestring operation at all. Maybe the money was going to like a Halle Bay, it was going up in the scientific boys, but the sledging bases got nothing.
Did you have spares for things?
No.
No radio spares?
Nope, not a spare. Not a spare.
Did it have a kind of an amateurish feel to it back in those days?
Yes, it was an amateur feel. Let's be honest, you got that feeling of the impression actually. Well known as you heard the expression, definitely it sounds out. It was all amateurs. And they didn't care.
Who's they?
Sick Fids and all like that there, whoever was running or crown agent for the colonies, I think we were allegedly registered, that's where we got our paperwork from, you know, when you were hired, with a red stamp saying temporary on every page, but no, it was very, I mean, they didn't care if any work was done or not, as long as we were in political occupation, that became obvious.
So politics was prime?
Politics was prime. Every time, as I said, we came to have got that over hot bit, this cloud, a flimming thing, crown land, what's it said? Crown land, keep out. We're supposed to tick everywhere. And I said, every time we met an agitator, you're supposed to tell him to remove himself. At least they were honest or decent. They used to give you a year in return. You can get out. We'll give you a year to get out. We get, you have to leave tomorrow, was our attitude.
Did you make any friends amongst the Argentinians?
No, amongst the Fed.
The Arges?
Yeah, not really. Well, not really, actually. They were very, very political. Very political.
These are the guys on Debenham Island,
right? Yeah. Very political. But then as it turned out to be, actually, I don't know whether Russia or something like that there. Their army base is shipped one guy. He was an Air Force officer, and he was a political officer. You know the way you see there? They seem to run it like that there. And they got themselves into a bit of trouble, and we used to kid themselves laughing. But at the same time, you know, what happened, if you remember, Perón was deposed. So they went out and knocked down the statue of Perón, smashed it, you see, and then Perón came back, you see. And what are you going to do about the statue? She said they couldn't see the humour of it. And actually, a year went, well, have they got salt mines in Argentina? sorry for you, Paddy, you laugh, we're serious trouble, you know, like that. They actually burnt that base down and they swore us to secrecy, we weren't to tell anybody.
They burnt their own base down.
Thank God they had a second base up. But, oh no, you get on well with them. Very well, and no problem at all.
So they burnt down the base at Debenham Islands? And the reason was to get a better one?
No, it was an accident one night.
Sorry?
It was some sort of accident.
Oh, right.
Oh, no, this was in the middle of the winter, actually. After the boys were killed, actually, you know, they got there. There's a one those who know they got. So they moved on to the other end and they came up to, hey, kiss anybody, please. We've had an accident. What's the accident? I think Mario, you called the baby. Mario. And this is it. We had a fire, put a hut going, you know, like, please do not tell anybody. We're in trouble.
were you aware of the fire at the time?
No, not that they told us, because it's too far away until they come. I think the Sonnington boys was aware of the fire first. Sonnington fire. Oh, no. No problem as individuals.
Right.
But once you cross that line, I became serious with them.
How do you mean, Ray?
Serious with them in the sense that I had an incident. You know, I went to Deception, went down twice and got hurt, actually. Coming down from the Argentine base, I'd been treated, and they were giving me a lift back and aboard the General San Martin. And this admiral sort of said, he produces this flaming map of Deception. And there in the middle is a little cross, pencil cross, you see. What is that? The hell, I know what she's a language, what that is, you know. You've stolen a British map, you know what I mean? You're hazarding my ship. It suddenly got very, very serious. And they wouldn't believe me, I didn't know what it was. This is where, you know, they were to a certain point and then all of a sudden, bang. And the big thing you had to watch with any of the strangers you met, any of the boats at all, was these protest notes. You could have a booze up, party, everything you got there, and shaking hands and the way out your hand at this protest note. There was a line you didn't cross with them.
But did anybody take these protest notes seriously?
Oh, yeah. I was told that. Yeah, I had it coded up, like myself. I had it coded up on the Navy 25. The Navy College 5, coding a brain, those days, actually. And that was sent to Stanley. Stanley sent it to the ambassador in Buenos Aires, who took it up with the government and all that got there. That's how serious it got. Oh, yeah, it got quite serious, these things. So you tend. It was the work involved, for the like of myself, that you, this is where you wanted to avoid them, like a plague. I mean, you know, telling each other you're trespassing. That's basically what they're about, trespassing. And I'm putting in some of the weirdest ideas, you know. You see, the second time I went down, I was in Deception, got hurt in Deception. But one of the things in Deception is, an old Argentinian ship would come on. and park, you know, out to the British base. Supposed to get me stuck on my 45 and the 12 and a half, my 12 foot dinghy and a wee outboard and turn 1 and 6 for 1,000 tons overnight for parking there. It was crazy. It was absolutely crazy, some of the things that went on. People don't believe me. I was about to laugh, you know, because I was drinking the guy. And the bloke says, 1 and 6, he says, Paddy, have you ever been to Punta Arenas? I know, no. He says, I will drop you there on the way home. You know, with some of you laugh, but they had a football match, that ship, I forgot the name of it, with the boys on the base. Ah, they stopped us, you know, there's 500 or 600 sailors on these ships and there's us, you know, the guy out there. And we got this Sudevi 25 coat off us all. Yes, it was the headlines, it seems, on the radio in Buenos Aires. The British and Arctic people had had played such and such a ship and we beaten 12-0. Listen, Navy 25 coach, you're not to do this again.
Oh, really?
Aye.
Football was banned against the opposition.
You'd be talking as a laugh, but this would say there was a... They're always trying to score political points on you.
I wonder whether you're underplaying how difficult it was to maintain all that radio equipment. Was it a real pain in the
neck? No, it was pretty solid equipment, actually. Don't forget, it was way before transistor days and all that got there. The only thing that you had would like to go on, we had a few of them, was the valves would burn out now and again. Mm. What happened to our transmitter, actually, there was a connector broke, and that took me a month to find it. It was such a simple thing, you were cursing when you found it.
So was the other equipment you had on base which was letting you down? Generators?
No, they seemed actually okay. Everything was good, solid stuff, but it wasn't. I think nowadays, maybe I'm wrong, everything's so fragile, you know, and so high tech. Everything was low tech, you know. You want to steal start a diesel, you swung a flaming handle. That handle, and we found out how to start diesels go weller, and, you know, by accident. The one thing that actually happened on a couple of bases, they give you ether to put, you know, in their intake. And after they discovered that, blew a couple of heads up diesels, nobody would use it. And what you do is light a Primus, blow it out, and start it on the fumes of the diesel. Mm. This is it here. And I showed actually the boys, actually, again, I was down the archery base, they couldn't start there. I showed them the trick, and I was a real expert. And she started to hot fumes, and once the diesel kicked, she's away, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, no, the stuff was good, solid. It wasn't fragile stuff.
Okay.
It was just old, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just old.
It seems to me that you made a number of trips to and from Stonington, is that right?
Oh, yeah. Quite
a lot, actually.
Quite a few, actually, yeah.
What was that for?
Just freebies, holidays. Mm. But none to do, actually. We're not doing ourselves. I mean, with three, what do we do? It was 8 skeds a day, taking a... There's nothing else to do. So, it was quite easy, you know, doing the skeds. I'll go off for 3-4 days. Yeah, I'll do you. You know, they got there. All you had to do is report it to Stanley.
Mm.
Stanley, and that's all
did
we were
Stanley
doing.
Know, did Stanley know you were making these trips?
I don't know. We didn't tell him. Yes, we went down to Stonington and this is it here. Went down to the Argentinian bases, and Argentinian bases, as I said, they were coming to us because they were on this banter, you know, this is it here. And I'll give them a due. They seem to have this thing about pickles and white.
Mm.
And, you know.
There's an odd phrase here which I can't understand, which you might be able to explain. It talks about rays toings and froings from Stonington and back across Marguerite Bay, and all the boxing and coxing that had to go on. Were you having to do this in secret or negotiate it?
No, I don't know. Yeah. The only boxing and coxing? I don't know. The only problem is, actually, we had a trip, one of the geologists there, he had a thing about travelling in daylight.
Mm.
And if you're doing it, yeah, they do it in the dark. That's no exaggeration. I don't know what he means, understand. So he started off after breakfast and gave me his shout after you've had your dinner at night. We've got the sledge loaded now because you're wasting your time trying to help him. And he had a thing, yes, 3 times or something like that there that actually, yeah, you travelled the whole way from Stonington to the horseshoe in the dark. I don't understand the thing like that there. No, let's put it this way. Anybody, as I said, even the Stonington boys sort of said, that's the only thing that you're getting there once a month, actually, or something like that. You're allowed, and you want to, these penny award emails for what they're calling now email. Mm-hmm. Not, there's no traffic. Spent most of your time in the base if you're sitting there on the ham bands, the radio ham bands, which the world wanted to talk to you because you're call signed. I was VP at CN, Canada Norway. As soon as you come on the radio, bang, the world is after you, you know. Because in those days, actually, they used to send these cards to each other, you know, this is it here. And I laughed, actually, the main problem was getting past blame in Brazil. We had a 1 kilowatt transmitter, they had an average of 10 kilowatts up there. And the Yanks were the same. We had about the lowest powered equipment we ever had, you know, but that did the job. I mean, it did the job. We worked right, in the sense we actually could, in certain times, work straight into a guy in Glasgow. They put your mother on the phone. Highly illegal, of course, you know, but they put your mother on the phone.
You did some radio work at Deception as well, didn't you? Right?
Yeah.
Was that any better, or was that worse?
No, well, I never got a chance. We were doing the same, actually, at Deception. There were two of us, actually, on the thing that actually was Deception. What happened in Deception is you discovered, you hear the Whistler program? I got involved in that like an idiot. And after, you know, we went up through the cables over to the other side. Other side, and of course, Murphy's Law, cable, one of the bombs of cable doesn't go on the sea. So I had to go down and pin it up, and that's when I got hurt.
What happened there, Ray?
My fault. Well, I was coming up the rope, and with 200 feet of rope out, which was stupidity when you think of it afterwards. And I just got over the top, sort of said, and I jerked off my feet, and I jerked against a boulder. Guy sort of said he was climbing to come off, and it was like a pendulum. And anyway, he got him up there, more or less me doing that, you know, this thing. And it sort of disced out my neck and it disced out my back, and I picked him away from the very 3 places or something like that. Anyway, we got back down to the wee boat and headed back to the base, and got to the bit. And I said, I can't get out, boys, I'm paralysed. And I couldn't. So they took me to the Argentine base, and they had a doctor, we didn't. So they treated me in the Argentine base, actually, the doctor, and I was there for about, I think, two or three weeks, actually, and, but then, the protector turned up with a doctor and all I got there. No way was I allowed to stay, and the funny thing, halfway up the Atlantic, back in the heat, everything was not, say, cleared up, but this is it here, they just wouldn't let me stay. So I didn't see how much actually up Deception in the sense of just the radio work within Deception was that they got the first aircraft down there actually, and I was putting up the Sarah beacons. This is where the radio beacons and all I got there, but we were so disorganized or unorganized. I mean, the Sarah beacon, for example, which is transmits a free signal. This is for the aircraft, the home in on. We put it outside the hut, which is in a hollow. We had no cable on, they put it up on top of the hill where you could have heard it. You could hear it from one end of that flipping bay to the bay to the other. You know, listen, this is what it said. And I went up, tried it, it didn't work. That's it. Nobody ever thought, actually, yes, we're having these aircraft in Deception. They're in the bottom of a hollow. Their signal rescue, shall we say, home and beacon, is in the hollow. How can you hear it? That's what used to drive you nuts about the organisation down there. Nobody ever thought anything.
But on the whole, final question, Ray, on the whole, how do you regard that episode in your life now?
Oh, brilliant, brilliant. Went to sports hall, really. A lot of adventure on it. A lot of adventure. Went to sports hall. Nobody took it serious in my day. We didn't take it serious. We fell out with everybody. And it was a wonder occasion. And as I said, I enjoyed it so much that I went down the second time, and unfortunately, the thing. But then I knew the second time, actually, that was my days over, you know, after having the medical problem. So I had to settle down and make a living. And it was a brilliant time, actually, brilliant time. And maybe they're now changed, maybe it's all, I don't know, listen to some of the others, too organised. I mean, all the guys, actually, when I was in there, whatever sick fits, you just ignored it and got on and done your own thing. Because, you know, we didn't believe in all this, actually. So that's basically it. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Lovely, sir. Ray, thank you very much indeed.
That was it.